Daily news, breaking updates, and exclusive podcasts. iTricks.com.
It's The Amazing Show, featuring the amazing James Randi. For more information on all things Randi, including the Million Dollar Challenge, head to randi.org. Hello and welcome to The Amazing Show. I'm Justin Robert Young from iTricks.com and TalkingHeadTV.com. And joining me as always in the Isaac Asimov Library is the man who makes the show, the amazing James Randi.
Hey, 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 and here I am.
And also, yes, sorry, it's hard to step on your introduction there, but also joining us is a very, very special guest from Revision 3 Scam School, and as well, he just wrapped up the Halloween Horror Nights in Orlando, Florida. It is Brian Brushwood.
Hello. I'm not that special a guest. I'm just a guest.
Very, very special guest. Don't let his humility fool you. But yeah, this is kind of a Jetsons Meet the Flintstones episode for, I'm sure there's many of the Scam School viewers are going to be listening to this, as well as our regular listeners to The Amazing Show. But I just want to go ahead and let you start things off. You have the ear of Randi on the podcast.
At least there's no big giant pressure all at once. Go into the mountain. Now speak your question. I know you hear this all the time, but phenomenal fan of your work all the way back in college. I got the Encyclopedia of the Occult and Supernatural. Loved all of your stuff. As somebody who's, I host my little show called Scam School, and we would love to eventually talk a lot of about the supernatural, about how people have fooled people in believing they have psychic powers and stuff. And it makes me want to know about when you got started, especially, like, I think to myself, how long does it take to build up as thick a skin to the buffoonery of these people that you have? I mean, you seem utterly unflappable when it comes to these guys, and that is something I would love to get to eventually.
Well, I started late. I was, about 4 years old by the time I really got into it, and I began to doubt things like Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy and a few other good things like that, and the neighbors and my friends of similar age thought I was a little strange. They still do. Of all ages, they think I'm pretty strange, and they're pretty right. As a matter of fact, I once spoke to Andrew Harder about that. I said, Andrew, do you remember a time when you weren't skeptical? And he thought for a long time, like 12, 15 seconds. And he said, no. He said, I guess I was always skeptical. And I thought to myself, what would my answer to that question be? And I had to agree with him that always I have been skeptical. And I don't remember a time when I wasn't skeptical. And I mean in a healthy way. I don't mean cynical.
Yeah.
I never mean cynical. You've got to be very careful of that. But I always had to kick the tires on the bike before I bought it, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And later on the car before I bought it. I don't know why you kick the tires. I really haven't figured out why you do that, but it's better than doing nothing.
Make sure you're not made of plastic.
It's something like that.
Yeah.
And so was it always that your skepticism carried with it a penalty or, I guess, difficulties associated with it? Or was there a certain point in your career when you had to deal, was it when you started getting sued that things changed or...
Well, getting sued does get your attention. it causes you to swallow a bit. Now, mind you, I've been sued many times over the years by all kinds of people who say they've got psychic powers and whatnot. None of them have ever won, except Geller in Japan. He won a case against me by default because I simply told the judge, I wrote the judge an endearing letter, I thought, and apparently it was. In his opinion, I just simply said I can't afford to go to Japan for 2 months because it would have taken at least 2 months to go in there, get prepared, do the thing, and, live off the land. That's pretty tough. That's pretty expensive.
Yeah.
And I certainly at that time in my life, I couldn't afford it. And I simply wrote the judge and I said, I'll effectively plead no contest. I can't afford to defend this. The judge, in his great wisdom, and never met the judge. I wish I could one of these days. He decided to lower the charge that Geller had brought against me, which was one of libel. He lowered it to insult.
Yeah.
Now, in Japan, that's a legitimate thing. You can sue people for being insulted, for your being insulted, of course. And but if international law says, apparently, so I'm informed at least, that if you're being sued for something which in your country is not illegal, we're talking about civil cases now,
yeah.
Not criminal, of course, that if something doesn't apply. And not only that, in Japan, if you're awarded less than $10,000 and you're living in an international location, a foreign location, they never press it because it's just not enough money to fuss about. It costs them more to pursue it than it does to enforce it. So, and not only that, but the third factor in this case was the judge awarded him, what is it, 0.1% of what he was asking for, which amounted to a couple of $1,000s, because they always sue me for tens of millions, of course, as if I have tens of millions to pay out. In any case, it amounted to a couple of $1,000s, I believe. And then we found out that Geller had to surrender the right to collect that from me, if he had any right to collect it from me, in order to settle another case with the CSI COP, which was PSYCOP at the time, is now CSI,
mm-hmm.
and as one of the terms of his settlement with them. And he had to pay out something like $270,000 to them.
Yes.
So it's not a winning proposition for Geller and for other people to sue me because they never get anything. I've never paid a dollar out except for legal fees, of course.
Yeah. Well, I just get, if I can distill Brian's question there, and correct me if I'm wrong, but was there ever a time in your young career when you realized that these, you know, the people that you were coming in conflict with, number one, could not be, you know, reasoned or negotiated with, and that they, you know, you're going to have to at times kind of go bare knuckle with them, that you're going to have to go to the mat with the people who, you know, didn't take kindly to what you were saying?
Well, I've always been prepared to go to the mat. I still am.
Yeah.
Mind you, I wouldn't perform. The mat is not all that great for me these days. But, nonetheless, better than cement floor, I'll tell you that. I've was always prepared for that. I was always prepared to do battle. After all, if you make the comments, you make the statements, you have to stand by them and you have to be prepared to defend them. And I won't stay silent. There's no question of that. I'm a fighter. I don't know where I got it from. I don't know exactly how it originated, but I've never backed down. I've never had a moment's problem with bringing up the matter exactly as it is and fighting for it.
Okay, so there was no time when you know that switch flipped and
no.
You know no. You're always
fighting. No magical moment. Let's put it that way.
So is that, I guess, Brian, I mean, the question would be, is that something that you know, that
you're kind of worried about? I mean, to distill the question even further, I guess that what I was curious is, just as it sounds like the skepticism was innate from day one, it sounds like so was the willingness to engage in conflict over it, which is really what was interesting to me.
Oh, yes. No, it's part of the battle. You don't enter into a battle like this, or a war, without being determined that you're going to go all the way with it. I can't see going halfway into something like this. I stand by my guns and I answer the piper when the piper sounds.
Even today, we heard right before we started recording that, you know, some Yahoo called in and wanted to sue you about comments on the boards. Yeah.
Well, to be honest, that's what kind of got me thinking about it, because it's just the fact that, you know, it's ring, ring, hey, lawsuit online too. Do you want to take it? And Randy's like, sure, why not? I mean, it's like...
It is Monday.
That's amazing to me.
But mind you, the vast majority of these things never result in lawsuits. People just make big noises and they're going to send their lawyers and they expect me to immediately start trembling and shuddering and stuttering and it doesn't happen. So they're usually a little disappointed, but they wonder, why aren't you afraid?
Yeah.
Because I've got nothing to be afraid of. What? Next case.
Fear's a young man's game anyway, right?
Yeah, there you go.
I would imagine that sooner or later the opposite has to happen. You have to get the phone ringing, and it's a delightful phone call of somebody who you've changed their lives for the better.
Oh, that happens all the time. It's amazing how much it happens. Well, the gentleman who was in here just before you arrived, as a matter of fact, from Poland. He's been very generous with his support of our foundation, and he brought his little daughter along with him, and we had a wonderful hour or so here in the library, and I was doing stupid tricks for her, and she was enjoying them. But he told me in so many words, yes, you did turn my life around. You changed the way I look at the world, and I realized that, as many people tell me, that there are other skeptics out there, because I often get this approach of, gee, until I read your book or I heard you speak at a lecture or read an article by you or whatever, saw you on YouTube, I thought I was the only person who had this attitude of skepticism, and I find out that there are a lot of us around.
Do you find what do you find the ratio is in positive to negative responses, and is it a constant over the years, or is it getting more positive?
It's highly variable, but I do get, of course, remember that people who are just going to compliment me, they just send me a brief note saying, thank you for having made a change or a difference in my life. You get these, and I just have a brief response to them. Thank you for the flattering words, and I'm glad I was of some use to you. But the other ones are a little more involved usually, and as with the gentleman today, now he's going to send his lawyers around any minute. We can just sit here and listen carefully.
wait for them to beat down the door.
For the knock on the door, yes. But it gets, these people aren't dealing with, first of all, they're not dealing with a full deck in many cases, and they're not prepared to go ahead with it. They really aren't. They think they are. But then they talk to the lawyers, and the lawyers say, well, you haven't got a case, but we'll take it. Lawyers will take money to do anything, as you know.
Yeah.
And can hardly blame them. Somebody's
awesome
going to spend money foolishly.
They're really good at taking money for anything.
But, of course, the lawyers have also got to be concerned about bringing frivolous lawsuits. If they know from the beginning that the case doesn't have any merit, then you can bring Rule 11 against them. And Rule 11, if it goes through, and in our cases it never seems to go through, simply says that they and their client have to pay all the costs. Now, this is the only country in the world that doesn't have this as part of civil law, that if you bring a civil suit against someone and you lose, you have to pay the cost on both sides. And that is a ridiculous premise that they don't have such a law in America.
I agree.
Because, in the U.K., Geller doesn't bring suits against me in the U.K. He'll bring them in the United States, but he won't bring them in the U.K. because he knows he's going to lose, and he knows he's going to have to pay.
Do you still get lawsuits from Geller?
Oh, no, I get noises from his brother-in-law, Shippy, who pretends to be a lawyer.
I see.
And his son, who is a lawyer. As a matter of fact, I don't know if he is a lawyer, but he's training in the law in a way. How embarrassing it must be for the kids, Avery Geller as a father. But that's only a value judgment on my part. I guess they probably love him dearly. And Daddy bent another spoon for me today. Oh, Will, you're so lucky. But, of course, spoon bending is something that has not moved our species ahead one bit, so far as I can determine. No. Being able to
maybe
bend
90
a spoon.
Degrees.
Yes. But any idiot can bend a spoon, but apparently some idiots are paid for it.
Yes.
Next case.
I was actually curious if over the last few years you've noticed any new trends in the realm of pseudoscience and woo-woo stuff that surprised you, or is it a case where it's all just the same old stuff with a new coating over it?
Well, yes, that surmise is pretty well correct. You see, as when I signed a contract to do the Korean series that I did a couple of years back, the interpreter said, "Oh, they're all concerned because they know that in Korea there are psychics that you've never seen before. They're absolutely original." And I thought, "I don't think so," but I said, "I'll wait till I get there." When I got there with my associate, I looked around. I said, "It's exactly the same old crapiola." That's a technical term, I do say now and then. And actually, it is. It's the same stuff. There's nothing new in it since about the 16th century or so. Literally, the language is different. They use forks instead of spoons, or pretzels instead of breadsticks.
Well, specifically, what's surprising to me is, I guess there was a National Science Foundation poll that found the latest poll I saw was from 1990 to 2001 or something like that. And at this time, when you have the internet and information is more freely available than ever before, belief in all, I think, 8 or 10 of the pseudosciences they asked about had gone up. Is that a case where...
Yeah. Well, information and misinformation are equally available.
Right.
Now, Google and Wikipedia, just full of information, absolutely jam-packed. But you've got to judge it individually. You can't accept it because Wikipedia has done a pretty good job in the past. No, you have to look at it very carefully. So using some discernment and a bit of caution here will pay off very well. I found all kinds of things on Google that have been very informative and very helpful for my writing and for my lecturing. I don't know how I could have done without some of it. But on the other hand, there's also an awful lot of, again, crapiola in there. A lot of errors, but it's subject to correction. And I have to go in there and I look at entries on myself and on the foundation. And every 2 weeks or so, I just put an oar in the water, so to speak, and I just move it around a bit to change the slant of it if it's incorrect. Not if it's derogatory or defamatory. No, that's their business. Everyone has a right to say what they feel to be true or to express their opinion. But when it's blatantly false, I want some changes made in it.
So one of the things that seems to have been so amazing about the internet is that it brings together splinter communities, very tiny pawns throughout the whole world. What are some of the like-minded groups you've run into through the internet that you've connected with? Maybe somebody else doing some similar work to yours that you've run into?
Oh, well, Massimo Polidoro in Italy. Of course, Massimo was a student of mine for many years. He lived at my home in Fort Lauderdale for several years, as a matter of fact. And I think that was probably, I hope, a positive experience for him and that he learned something from it. He certainly appears to have, because he's turning out books at an enormous rate, and all very good stuff, too. He's really been very diligent about that, and he's writing papers on these subjects. He has taken a degree in psychology since. I last knew him in this country. I visited him many times, him and his family, near Milan. And that's a pretty good example, I think, of how I've passed the torch on. And Massimo constantly says that he owes it to his association with me, and that's it's very flattering if something like that happens. But I find skeptical groups wherever I go now, any place in the world. I'm surprised, as a matter of fact, some communities will have something that meets only every 2 weeks or so, and maybe it's only, 6 or 8 people in some cases. But they do get something done, and they exchange notes, and they write articles for the local paper. And so there are a great number of skeptical groups, and some of them, of course, look at the amazing meeting in Vegas last. We had 940 people attending that. And
it's only getting bigger each year.
Exactly.
Right?
So we've had to move the venue to another one of the casinos, a new one that is much larger, because we certainly will do 1,200 this coming year, I'm sure. And we're doing one in the UK as well.
Oh, really?
Fantastic. Yeah.
I don't think we've talked about that on the podcast.
Well,
yet.
We haven't decided on a date yet. We're going to hold on to that, but that will be either September or October of this next year, and that will attract a lot of people from the continent, of course, because it's very easy just to travel across the channel. It's a quick trip from any place in Europe, and we will attract an awful lot of people from many countries, I'm sure.
Wow! So JREF UK, keep that in the back of your mind.
You betcha.
So I actually have a couple of questions. I know the $1 million challenge recently came to a close.
No.
Or I guess it's still open through when?
No, it's March the 6th, 2010.
Okay.
Where we're planning, but we're reconsidering that simply because of the interest that announcement generated. Because many people are now starting to crow, you see, he knows that we can win it, and he's going to give it up because he's scared of losing it. That's not talk I like to hear. So that is, of course, not true.
Yeah.
I haven't the least fear that woo-woos are going to win the prize, or that anyone's going to win the prize, even if they're not woo-woos. So there's a possibility that it just may continue. We don't need to take the money out of circulation. Oh, it's not in circulation, mind you. It's invested very safely. But we don't need to take advantage of that.
That is wonderful.
We'll see. Not ready to make the announcement yet.
I know, and I'd be interested to hear how many people there are like me. When I first heard the talk of closing the challenge, the first thought that came to my mind was like, look, I'll shell out. I'm sure there's thousands of folks like me that'll shell out $100 a year just for the safety blanket. I just love knowing that it's out there, that whenever you get in an argument with anybody, it can always come down to, oh yeah, well, if you're 100%, why don't you go collect $1 million?
The bar argument value is...
Exactly. I've won so many bar arguments there.
Worth an investment.
Well, I don't frequent bars. As you know, you can tell from my sort of conservative attitude about these things. No, I don't frequent bars, so I don't know about the bar scene, and I'll take your word for it.
Yeah,
because both of you
We'll just say it's like the kitchen table issues.
Yeah, but remember another thing too: the misstatements, the canards that are out there about it. Oh, the prize has already been won, or it's been won, but he refused to award it. No, he runs all the tests himself, and he's the judge of them. All of these are absolutely false. They're what they call in the trade canards. Ducks, if you will. And it speaks of quackery, doesn't it?
Indeed.
So these statements are made all the time. And many people are quite satisfied to hear that, too, because they can't understand why the prize hasn't been won. Oh, many people are saying, the prize hasn't been won, but doing these things is so simple. You just do them and they work. No, they don't.
Yeah. So, and they haven't.
That's right. They don't and they haven't.
Well, I'm thrilled to hear the possibility of so already on the table through 2010, possibly beyond that.
Oh yes, no. If we continue it, I think it'll go on for many years following that.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's good. For the past year, or I guess until 2 months ago, my assistant Jonathan Pritchard was an intern, and he told me the tales of going through the applications for the $1 million challenge and. Talk about how they would be 5 pages, and there's only one requirement. In one paragraph, simply state what you can do. Two paragraphs, okay. And they would get 5 pages of when the moon is aligned with Libra. Yes,
and not only that, usually handwritten on both sides of foolscap with a bad ball pen. And we just send them back. We don't read them because they're much too difficult to go through. And we say 2 paragraphs. Then they write 2 paragraphs, which take 4 pages of foolscap, you see.
Yeah.
2 pages for the first paragraph.
If I don't use a period, it's still a sentence.
There you go. It's still a paragraph, yeah.
That's funny. Now, I know that the bulk of the people applying for the prize or who call, rattling the saber of lawsuits, likely just go back about their business. Has there been many cases where the JRF or the challenge has opened people's eyes and made a full-on conversion to sensibility in some of these people?
Not that I know of. As a matter of fact, I remember an episode years ago of my friend Dick Smith in Australia when we tested 11 dowsers. And they tried very hard over a period of several days. The tests were very well designed, very well controlled. And they got exactly what chance would call for. Precisely, right on the nose, the guesses were what statistical chance would call for. And so we gathered them all together in his office, and Dick asked him a question. He said, how many of you here by a show of hands still believe that you have the power to douse? And of course, all the hands went up. So this doesn't discourage them one bit. They can fail any number of times, but they know they still got the power. And then one gentleman's hand faltered and started to come down, and Dick jumped on him and said, hey, you're having doubts? So he said, yes, I'm beginning to have doubts about it. I have to think about this. So they left, and Dick turned to me with a big grin and said, well, we got 1 out of 11. We've never done that well before. I said, and I was wrong in saying this, I said, Dick, give him a couple of days, and he'll be back to you, and he'll figure out some reason why he shouldn't have said that. But I was wrong, because within an hour, a phone call came, and he called in and said, oh, no, I spoke with the other fellows, and they told me that it was probably the wireless transmitters you were using a little walkie-talkie, and we didn't have cell phones in those days.
Yeah.
And so he had his reason. Now, mind you, that same group was tested again after I left Australia, and they were tested in Perth on the other coast of Australia, and they did just as well as they had done before. In other words, they failed. That's all there is to it. And but that doesn't dampen their enthusiasm one bit, because they still know they've got the power.
Well, and speaking of damping enthusiasm, I would imagine it's got to be disheartening to know. I mean, it's certainly after so many years and seeing, you know, no progress with you know, waking people up to the dowsing and so on. Where does your resolve? Where do you recharge your enthusiasm for dealing with these people?
Well, because every now and then, I will get, and I can show them on the show to you today on the webpage, as a matter of fact, notes from people, as from the fellow from Poland today, said that reading it over, he finally found a reason to be reasonably satisfied that there were other people out there thinking the same way. Very, very few people make an about turn. The only ones who do are people that are not really into it all the way. They're only into the waist. They're not down to the neck or anything like that in the quicksand. And they can make an escape from it. And when they do, it's usually rather dramatic. As a matter of fact, they get very bitter about the whole thing if they realize they've wasted a great deal of their life pursuing this chimera that just doesn't exist.
Well, and that actually leads into another question I have. Do you, with all your dealings of people, do you think it's sort of a red state, blue state thing where there's 50% believers and skeptics, or is it more, you know, some percentage on each end and the bulk of America is undecided or hasn't really entertained one side or the other?
Well, for one thing, most people, I don't think about it very much. They either accept it because a favorite actress or something, you know, said something. And she must be an intellectual giant because I saw her in this film.
Yeah,
and playing somebody very smart.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh yeah, she has to be very smart.
Because Anne Hathaway has a magnetic bracelet, which means that of course it must help your circulation.
Now, Britney Spears said it was true, so how could you doubt that? You know? But people, they tend to accept authority even if it doesn't have any authority, simply because someone is. Well, look at the President of the United States. He's a science basher. And we're speaking before the election now, aren't we? Mm-hmm. A couple of days. Well, one day. But yes, on Monday before the election. And, well, whoever gets in tomorrow, I think it certainly will be an improvement. But this science bashing that's been going on in the Bush administration is just shameless. It is really surprising. The gentleman from Poland who was here just saying, yes, we're just wondering what's going to happen in the United States now, because we've always looked to the United States as an example of proper decisions and rationality. We don't always agree with everything the United States says or does, not by any means, but we've looked to them as an example of a going civilization, a responsible civilization. And that feeling has faded in the last 8 years, faded considerably. And so we've got to look forward. We've got to look forward to certainly an improvement, no matter who gets in tomorrow.
And do you, again, in your world travels, do you find, I'd love to hear which countries you feel like are maybe ahead of America in pro-science rationality versus, I guess you would put North Korea at the bottom of the list.
Yes. Very, very close to the bottom of the list, if not below it.
Yeah, or maybe even for their populace, a did not participate. I don't know if they really
something like that,
much
yes.
of a well, choice there.
You know, Sweden and Norway and Denmark, the Scandinavian countries in general, and certainly... I would say Finland as well. They seem to be very rational compared to the rest of the world in general. Africa is abysmal in that respect because their leaders have always had very big influence on the citizens of African countries, as they do all over the world, of course, but particularly in Africa, I've noticed that. And the way the people are ruled, and they are ruled rather than cooperated with, they are ruled, they're bossed around, and they get sort of used to it, and they just have to take it. They don't have much of a choice. But certainly in the Scandinavian countries, I think they're much more rational. They tend to be much more rational. Of course, I don't have the experience of the everyday citizen in the street. I don't get to talk to those people. I don't get to experience them, and I don't read the newspapers because I don't read the language. I think that that's generally the case, that Scandinavian countries, yes, they are much more rational.
And you'd place, it sounds like, Africa, because of the, I guess, the propaganda and political instability mm-hmm. and the difficulty of getting yep. any kind of message across.
Yes, I think so. And not only that, it's too bad. It's really a very unfortunate. You see, I was just reviewing my foster children through Plan USA. I have, I believe, 7 at the moment. It's hard to keep track of how many children I support to a very, very small amount of money each month. It's really mm-hmm. very small. I think it's only like $9 or $11 or something a month that I pay mm-hmm. for each child. And that is minuscule compared to what it buys them. And I'm doing a blatant commercial right here for Plan USA. And I will have a piece going up on the webpage in a day or so.
Do you know, is it planusa.com or?
Well, let me see. That's a good question. You can find it under Plan
USA. Anybody, Google immediately.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Google will find it. As we know, Google knows everything. And what it doesn't know, Wikipedia does. But no, Plan USA is, and I've been with them since 1966, I think it is now. And that's a number of years. You can do the subtraction.
Nice.
And I can see Justin working on it right now. Here's your crayon. Here, take this crayon. On the floor in the corner. There, on the wall. That's fine. Yeah, much better.
I mean, roll out the butcher paper.
Yeah, there
we'll
you
figure
go.
It out.
But I must say, I have been satisfied in every respect with my association with Plan USA. Very, very much satisfied. I only got once to visit one of my children that I was supporting, and that was in Ecuador many years ago, in the mm-hmm. in the 60s, as a matter of fact. That was so rewarding and so so dreadful in another way, though, because I met a family in Guayaquil, two kids, mother and the father. And the father was a little tiny guy. He was smaller than I am, if you can imagine that.
Wow!
Yes, actually smaller than I am. And a little fellow with his hat in his hand. And he was meeting Big Daddy from the USA.
Yeah.
And that was so uncomfortable for me. So uncomfortable. It was late in the afternoon, and I met the family, and I shook hands with them, and everyone was very, very quiet, looking very subdued. And then I got my opportunity. Oh, that was a great opportunity. through the interpreter, of course. I was speaking through the interpreter. My Spanish is minuscule. And the father of the family asked me how many children I had. And I cast my head down. I thought, this is my chance. I think I could do well with this. And I just simply said, I have no children. And he looked sad right away.
Yeah.
He came over to me and he hugged me.
Ah.
And he commiserated with me because I didn't have any children. And I thought, this worked beautifully. It worked beautifully. Yes, I was manipulating the old fella, but at the same time, it worked.
Yeah.
Because he felt superior to me in a small way. In a small way, he was saying, this poor gringo from the U.S. of A., you know, he has no children. Oh, what a catastrophe for him, you know. And then he proudly dragged out all the photographs and the albums. And what I noticed in the albums was all of my letters were there. Every last one of them. And the wrappers and the stamps, all carefully preserved. And when I walked into his little home on stilts, because this is Guayaquil where it floods very frequently, and we had to climb up a long bamboo ladder and all through his little home, all thatched and very, very carefully kept, there were letters from me stuck on the wall with pins. I mean, that gets you. You know, you realize how important you are to this family because they didn't expect me to arrive. The plan people dragged me out there and called him and then got him down off the ladder. And, oh, he was all excited. He called the family down. He wasn't expecting me to come, so they didn't set up for me.
Yeah.
I was being worshipped like a demigod of some kind. It was very embarrassing for me. But as he left me, he said that he wanted me to know that he was very, very sorry to hear that I had no children. And I let a tear come to my eye. And it worked.
Yeah.
It worked very well. And he left with his head held high. And that was a very good moment for me. a really good, and the foster parents people, it was called Foster Parents Plan at one time, just called Plan USA now. But they lit up and said, oh, that was slick. They saw what I had done, and they thought that was pretty slick. And I thought it was pretty damn slick, too. So there. Yeah, I was very satisfied with that experience. Very good.
Sounds satisfying.
Yeah. Yes,
that's
it was.
Cool.
So I tell everybody out there, all you folks, if you want to get to do something really useful at a very, very good price, it's very cheap to get involved in it. And you get the letters and you get the photographs from the kids and the family and the regular process that is described to you in detail every month. And, you know, you're putting hygienic means at their disposal. You're putting fresh water at their disposal. You're building play fields for them to play soccer and whatnot. You're doing things that are really worthwhile. And it lasts. And the first kid that I actually got to visit there, this little kid went on to DeBerry and raise at least two children that I know of as of a couple of years ago. And boy, that's really something, because he may not have grown up as straight and tall and as well if it had not been for my existence. And that's something to be proud of. And I am very proud of it. So there.
Yeah,
there we go.
Yeah.
Yes.
Who said skeptics don't have compassion?
There you go.
Yeah. Stick that in your pipe and smoke it.
Yes. God damn it. Get out there and give some money. Come on. Come on. No, you will find it very satisifying. Very, very satisfying.
Plan USA. Everybody Google that. All right. Are there any final
I've
words?
Got a million questions, but if there are any tidbits, are there any tidbits that are releasable about TAM-7?
No, we can't say anything about it yet. We're going to do it all in one swell swoop.
Yes,
as they
okay.
say. No, I want to hold that. We'll do that next week.
There we go.
I got to tune in.
That's why I like having Brian here. Brian just asked the question that I gloss over. He's not in the machine. So, all right. Well, I'd like to thank, of course, the amazing James Randi and also Brian. Thank you for coming in and helping us out this week.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
Questions, comments, topic suggestions, email randy@itricks.com.
itricks.com.